This week, we are covering issues related to misdiagnoses. And today we're going to talk about challenges with diagnosing adults with mental health conditions. And while adults are probably the majority of the patients seen in mental health clinics, right. There are a lot of challenges that come with trying to diagnose an adult with a mental health condition.
Right. This has been a fascinating week for me. It's something, inaccurate diagnosis or either inaccurate diagnosis or no diagnosis or too many diagnoses are topics that we don't frequently talk about, especially in public. Right. You and I talk about it all the time because you and I are always talking to each other about cases and making sure that we are on the right track or trying to make an accurate diagnosis. But it's not something that we talk about very much in public.
Right.
We are trained. Every 2 years we have to have continuing education in medical errors, which is misdiagnosis. But it's not something we know very much about, and we don't know how frequent it is.
Right.
The other thing that we discovered this week is that we don't really know how often misdiagnosis occurs, you know, which is a little alarming. You know? But how would you study it? I mean, who's going to admit that, you know, we could write to our colleagues and say, how many times have we, because frequently we don't know when we have a misdiagnosed.
Right, and we will certainly get into some of the clinician-based factors associated with it on Friday, but you're right. I mean, how do we, you don't typically know that you've misdiagnosed someone until the patient's not coming back and they're going to see someone else who did something to identify another issue.
Right. So it's something we don't know, we know frighteningly little about the whole area of misdiagnosis.
Right.
Okay. Which was, so it's been a fascinating week, you know, to be able to take a closer look at all of this.
Yeah.
And this whole week was the suggestion of one of our listeners who happened to casually mention it, and we thought, well, that's a great idea.
Right.
You know, let's talk about it.
Well, so, and today we're going to touch on an issue that another listener wrote in about, and that is as it relates to making certain diagnoses, especially in adults.
Right.
And so we're going to kind of touch on that today as well. So let's kind of jump into this as far as some of these challenges go. Now, as you could imagine, and this is sort of, we'll mention this one right off because it's a, this will be an issue when we talk about diagnosing children tomorrow, and this is an issue with diagnosing people, especially adults, with anything, whether it's a mental health condition or a medical issue or anything. And that is, you know, oftentimes patients will come in with the expectation of a particular diagnosis, either because for one reason or another they want a particular diagnosis, or because they feel from their own research that this particular diagnosis encapsulates what they're experiencing, or you know, any iteration of those kinds of issues. We have people that do come in for assessments that come in believing that they already know what their diagnosis is, and so they answer questions and respond and present in a way that would be consistent with that diagnosis, whether they have that diagnosis or not.
That's right. They have the they've spoken to friends. They've watched a TV program or a movie where this might be represented. They Google, they Google it, they do a search, and they start to narrow it down a little and say, well, I must have this. And so they come in and they present those symptoms. Okay. This is particularly true with some populations of patients. Teenagers, for example, will come in and they're convinced they have ADHD because they want medication because they see it as a study aid. Okay, and they'll come in and they'll present all of the symptoms that are associated with ADHD and say, oh, you must have ADHD because you... So they know what symptoms to discuss in the meeting. But it's true for adults, too, is they come in with the expectation that this is the direction that, that this should go. And it... They're not intentionally misleading, but it's they're on a taking us on a guided tour, if you will,
right.
of symptoms.
Right.
And that can lead to misdiagnosis because you're only hearing
right.
those symptoms, not all, frequently you're hearing those symptoms, not all the symptoms.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yesterday we talked about issues related to specific diagnoses that are right. typically misdiagnosed, and bipolar disorder was one. And I think bipolar disorder provides an excellent example of what we're talking about, where people will, you know, if they feel as though they have mood swings or they feel mm-hmm. as though they kind of shift in their mm-hmm. Feelings about things, they do a quick Google search and it comes up with mood swings equals bipolar disorder, and then they come in confident that they have bipolar disorder. And, you know, again, it's not necessarily the case, but they work to present that way. And sometimes they struggle a little bit when right. you inform them that that's not it.
Yeah, the internet has changed things so dramatically.
Right.
As you're talking, I'm thinking about the days when we had to go into a library. You had to physically go to a library. You had to go into Index Medicus, which was a huge...
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever use Index Medicus?
No.
It was a volume. I mean, it was a whole table full. It was a whole shelf full of volumes called Index Medicus. And you'd look up a topic, and they would tell you what journal, where is this topic addressed in the medical literature. Then you'd have to go into those journals and find them on a shelf somewhere, physically, mm-hmm. on a shelf, and find them. And then you'd pull it out, and somebody had removed it, had cut out the article.
Yeah.
So it wasn't in the journal where it was supposed to be. Access was so completely different. And this
right.
was in the 80s. You
yeah.
know that we had to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you can, I mean, people didn't know that the DSM existed in the 80s. I mean, the layman didn't know.
Right.
Now you can look it up on the internet and
right.
get all the symptoms.
Yeah.
Okay? So it's so much easier to do this today than
right.
it was even 30 years ago.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's one major issue, is the idea that patients often come in with the expectation or with the belief that they have a particular condition, and so they're going to present as though they have that. Again, and I like that you said, it's not necessarily that they're being overtly deceitful or knowingly mm-hmm. deceitful. It's
right.
it's that they, that's just what
yeah,
makes
it's more
sense
of
to
an
them.
Expectation. It's a sort of a pre-belief
right.
thing, you know, that they've looked it up and they've talked to other people and they've watched the TV show and they say, oh, I think I have that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Or they hear somebody being interviewed,
right.
you know, on TV, and they say, oh, I have similar symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've said many times this week, you might have similar symptoms, but there is symptom overlap among these various disorders. You mentioned bipolar disorder. It shares many of the same symptoms of borderline personality disorder.
Right.
And it takes an experienced professional to be able to differentiate
right.
those two disorders
right.
because they do, their symptoms do overlap.
Right. Another issue or challenge associated with diagnosing adults is their presentation. You know, when a patient comes in, many times the patient is so distressed that it's really difficult for them to respond to questions adequately, really difficult for them to provide
mm-hmm.
the necessary background information that is needed to make an accurate diagnosis. And so, especially when patients are severely depressed,
right.
or if a patient has something like a psychotic disorder or something like that, it's really difficult to make those diagnoses because the patient, him or herself, may be in a position where they're just not a very good historian of their own life. And
right.
so it's really difficult to tell, you know, how long did this symptom last? How long did that symptom last? And what made this go away? And what caused this to happen? It's really difficult for them to differentiate those things.
Right. Frequently, you can imagine this happening, that the patient returns home and is explaining to a spouse or a relative, well, we talk about this and this, and the relative will say, well, did you mention
mm-hmm.
this? You know, oh, no, I didn't think about mentioning that.
Right.
Or, did you mention this? And no, I didn't think that was important. And so the point you make about when you go to the doctor, you probably go because you're in distress.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we tend to report what is currently immediate, on our minds, right. what's in our immediate radar. And in the case of bipolar disorder, you may be going through a depressive episode and you talk about depression, right. You talk about depressive symptoms, forgetting to mention that last weekend you stayed up all night painting a bedroom because you had so much energy. Mm-hmm. You just didn't think about mentioning right. it, but that would have important diagnostic implications for the right. physician.
Right, and even and you listening may say, well, shouldn't you ask if there's ever been a manic episode? And we typically do. The challenge, the problem is that for those of you who have ever been severely depressed, you know that during those times of severe depression, we can say, have there ever been times when you felt really good, really upbeat, you had lots of energy? And because of the way the depression is affecting you, you say no.
Right. You're so pervasively sad right. at that moment.
Mm-hmm. And so it is, again, not an intentional misleading. It's just that because of this state of distress that the patient is in at the time, we don't get the accurate information.
Right. And this, even if we don't talk about being Baker acted or right. or being subject to a Marchman act where mm-hmm. you are involuntarily hospitalized and under severe distress, you know, imagine the mm-hmm. confusing symptoms right. that a person's likely to present.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, another challenge, and this is a bit of a tough one, and that is, there are many times a person, an adult comes in, presenting with symptoms of a condition that is typically diagnosed much earlier in life. Mm-hmm. And this was the question that a listener wrote in about, and it has to do with diagnosing adults with conditions that are typically diagnosed in early childhood. Things yeah. like autism spectrum disorder, or more specifically, like at what we used to refer to as Asperger's, or right. even ADHD.
ADHD is another, right.
You know, mm-hmm. Those diagnoses are really challenging to make with adults.
In an adult.
Because, right. again, diagnostically, characteristics you know, that make up those diagnoses should have been present from the time the person right. was even a toddler
in some cases. Right. Mm-hmm.
And so trying to understand and appreciate how a person goes throughout childhood, through adolescence, mm-hmm. Sometimes even through college or you know, employment, mm-hmm. and now as a you know, 30 or 40 year old adult, right. somebody is looking at and saying, man, you've got a lot of, you know, traits of ADHD, or you have a lot of traits of autism spectrum disorder, it makes it really difficult to make that diagnosis.
You know, we frequent the ADHD, I think, was the first one of these, this idea of adult ADHD.
Right.
Okay. And it hit the popular literature 20 or 30 years ago.
Right.
Is it suddenly people said, well, this is an adult who has mm-hmm. ADHD. Mm-hmm. What happens is, with these disorders that you typically diagnose in childhood or adolescence, for example, we frequently see adults who mm-hmm. are in their, say, 40s or 50s. Mm-hmm. And you take a person, man or woman, it doesn't matter, though they have they had ADHD, but their parents were able to tolerate it. They got through college, mm-hmm. and they used the energy of ADHD to have a successful career. Many of them become wealthy business owners. Mm-hmm. Others become physicians. I remember Mel Levine had to have ADHD. I mean, right. he was just so active and so productive. He had this enormous energy. Mm-hmm. And he had a successful career. So you look at this person who has a successful marriage, a successful career, well known in his field, who would think mm-hmm. that there's an underlying disorder. And yet, they present with those symptoms later in life. But right. they were missed because they turned it to their advantage.
Right.
Or in the case of Asperger's, you know, Uncle Fred's a little bit weird. He's right. a little shy. He doesn't like to come to family events, you right. know, and you kind of tolerate he's a little bit weird.
Right.
And you don't think of it
right.
As a mental illness or diagnostic
right.
issue.
Well, and if you have good understanding teachers, and you have you know, adapting parents, and you have you know, if the conditions are right, you can absolutely get through childhood and adolescence and even young adulthood with at least mild symptoms of some of these things and do just fine.
It would be interesting to do a study of professional athletes,
right?
You know, who used all the energy or the you know, the same things that we call diagnostic markers, they turn them into athletic advantages because they do have enormous energy and they have enthusiasm and they have, you know, they're not attentive, but they have all the other traits you want in a in a good athlete.
Right.
You know, so,
but
you miss all that because they compensate, and they compensate for what we would consider deficits, symptoms.
Right. You know. So one of the strategies to help deal with that is you know, in talking with a person, is, you know, encouraging them to sort of conduct some introspection and look at themselves and you know, when did you have these difficulties? When did you first have some of these difficulties, and in what ways do they affect you, and when do you, you know, what did you do to overcome them? And what you find is that you start finding this, you start to see this pattern where, you know, yeah, I knew that I had this issue then, but I had these friends or these people who, that I kind of relied on to do that, or
I married wisely.
Right.
You know, I married somebody who kind of compensated for, for what we might call my deficits, you know. My wife took care of the checkbook or kept the kids going, and I didn't have to worry about that.
Right, right. So making those diagnoses are really difficult in adults because they just, they should have been diagnosed a long time ago.
That's right.
If they were going to be diagnosed.
That's right. And the other thing to remember is impairment.
Right.
Okay. If a person isn't impaired in some way, then you probably needn't worry about a diagnosis.
Right.
It might be interesting from a heuristic standpoint, from a clinical standpoint. Yeah, yeah, your brother-in-law meets criteria.
Right.
But he's not impaired in any way, so it really doesn't matter.
Right.
It's only when we get to impairment that I think it's important to think of this person in diagnostic terms.
Right. And by the time it gets to that, you know, then the patient, him or herself, is usually aware that, man, there's something going
on here.
And again, this is where, you know, when I see that, I will, for example, encourage them to look into, you know, what do those symptoms seem like?
Right.
You know, I've had adults come in that seem to fall on the autism spectrum somewhere, and I'll say, you know, you're talking about these social skills deficits. You're talking about these issues that you have with relationships. You know, does that sound like anything to you? Does that sound like anything? And it helps them again perform some introspection and build their insight a little bit, so that we can then talk about it diagnostically and then treatment-wise.
Right. And in addition to impairment, the other thing to remember is the stress diathesis model. In that, you know, many people who are successful students, who are good at being a student, they can get through high school, they can get through college, but when they enter a marriage, let's say, and they start to have children, that's a skill set that they may not possess.
Right.
And so stress increases, and it brings them to a tipping point where they do experience impairment. They never did before. They were able to get through college and graduate school or medical school or law school because they knew how to be a good student.
Mm-hmm.
But then they get into real life situations, and the increased stress of not being able to handle that can tip you over into impairment, and then you look for a diagnosis.
Right.
But again, it didn't appear because of that stress. The stress wasn't sufficient enough to bring it out.
Right. Right. So when it comes to diagnosing adults with mental health conditions, or I guess any medical condition really, there are some significant challenges and limitations. You know, we talked about a number of different issues. And we didn't, of course, even touch on the idea of stigma and the idea that, you know, sometimes people will come in for a mental health diagnosis, but aren't there because they want to be there. They're there because their spouse or their probation officer or somebody is making them be there. And so they're not going to be very forthcoming, and it's going to be really difficult to make a diagnosis. And, you know, psychologists and therapists and counselors, we don't have crystal balls. We can't tell that something is there if we don't know that it's there. So we don't know what we don't know.
And when your spouse picks up her cell phone and says, I'm either going to call my attorney or your physician.
Right.
It's time. Okay.
Right.
And sometimes that happens. Is if you don't deal with this, I'm not going to do this anymore.
Right.
And it's that kind of a threat. And it's under those conditions. And not necessarily coerced into coming in, but fearful of what might happen.
Right.
And again, you might get inaccurate information because of fear.
Right.
Okay. So lots of reasons why. And what makes it so difficult is that the diagnoses we're talking about are based on clinical symptoms, not lab. We've said that all week. They're not based on lab. You can't go in and take a test. Somebody has to make a clinical judgment, and it's based on what patients are reporting, either directly reporting or reporting through a test.
Right, absolutely. So. All right, well, that is it for today.
I love this stuff. I'm so happy that we got this suggestion from a listener.
It's a good topic.
And again, we always say this, if listeners, if there are things you want us to talk about, please let us know. We'd be happy to do it.
Absolutely so. All right, that's it for today. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.